So, like some of you perhaps of a certain age, when I was a young kid, 5, 6, 7 years old or so, I had a Saturday morning routine that largely revolved around cartoons. And I'll spare you the details of my routine, but I would get up early in the morning, look forward to my cartoons, and I would watch them for, a good long while until my mother would come along and say, "Lenny, it's a beautiful day. Get outside and play." And I don't remember anything really about the cartoons themselves, but I do recall that every now and then, this bear would show up on the screen wearing trousers and this funny hat, telling me that only I could prevent forest fires. And I thought, why is he telling me that only I can prevent forest fires? Doesn't he know that I'm just a kid? It made no sense, and to be honest, it was a little bit intimidating. Now, fast forward about 60 years or so, and I have to say, also like perhaps some of you, I found myself in a rather deep funk after November's election. And I resigned myself to kind of disengaging from the news, stopped listening to a lot of the political podcasts that I had been sort of hooked on, and thought I'd just disengage from politics altogether, at least for a while. Turns out a while did not last very long. Once I saw the cabinet members that were being nominated for their different positions, once I saw that the people who assaulted the Capitol on January 6th, people who had either been convicted or pled guilty, once I saw them being pardoned by the incoming president, once I saw our president fully embracing the talking points of Vladimir Putin regarding Russia's war on Ukraine, I decided I could no longer disengage. I couldn't. I decided if we're seeing this much happening this fast, we're headed for trouble. And since it didn't look like Congress was going to do anything to constrain our president, I was beginning to think that a mass mobilization of our citizenry might very well be our only hope of constraining Trump's worst impulses. Now, I'm going to digress for a moment into another story. As a young man in my college years, on one occasion I was hitchhiking from Virginia down to New Orleans, and I had had a really good day. Every single ride that I got, I probably waited 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes at most, and that was with rather light traffic. And then I got dropped off at an intersection where there was quite a bit of traffic, lots and lots of cars coming by. And I was pretty new to the whole hitchhiking thing at this point in time, so I didn't really fully understand it. And I thought, this will be great. I'll get a ride like that. And about an hour and a half later, I found myself thinking about a concept that I had come across in an introductory to psychology class called diffusion of responsibility. And what diffusion of responsibility means in a nutshell is if there is something that needs to be done in a community setting, and there's no one in particular that has the job of doing that thing, the more people there are present that could do that thing, the less likely it is that someone's going to step up to the plate to do that thing. Which brings us back to Smokey. Because it occurs to me that the only you can prevent forest fires thing is a largely, I think, a way of addressing that notion of diffusion of responsibility. That notion that I don't really have to think a lot about that because there's all these other people that'll keep that bad thing from happening. And I should say, in the years since becoming familiar with that concept of diffusion of responsibility, I have strived in my personal life not to be the person who says, oh, I don't have to worry about that. There's all these other people that'll take care of this. I'm not claiming that I've been perfect. But that's been my goal, and over the years, I've kind of done pretty well with that, I think. So, with Smokey in the back of my mind, and as we were approaching the end of March, I was feeling like if something needed to be done to constrain the worst impulses of our current president, well, I needed to step up to do my share. The song that you heard a few minutes ago that Amy sang wonderfully, You Got to Move. I first heard that as a young kid, maybe 10 years old, at a summer camp. And as I understood it, I may or may not have this right, but as I understood it, I've kind of always associated that with the Underground Railroad. And the message from that song has kind of stayed with me over the years, not necessarily always in the front of mind, but it's been there. And while I'm coming to the conclusion that something needs to be done in our country, and I can't shy away from it, the message of that song, and Smokey, lingered heavily for me. When the Lord gets ready, see, that's not really my way of understanding the world and how it works, but to me, personally, it's a fabulous metaphor, which basically means when it's time to do the thing, you got to do the thing. So I knew sooner or later I was going to have to get off the sidelines. And I told myself, yeah, but the time doesn't seem right. I didn't know when that time would be, but it wasn't there yet. And it began to trouble me quite a bit that I didn't know when that time would be. And more importantly, it began to trouble me that how was I going to know when it was that time? And what if I just let the time pass? And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm being honest with myself, the time, the moment, was probably on Inauguration Day when all those folks that assaulted the Capitol were pardoned. I'm not making excuses for myself, but I didn't have it in me to be the one guy that goes out on the street with a sign. And nor am I really an organizer. Outside of the leadership role that I'm sort of have to fulfill in my work, I've never viewed myself as much of a leader. So I wasn't taking initiative, and I was tying myself up in knots, thinking something's got to happen, but I don't know when. And then one morning, I opened up my Facebook page, and I saw an announcement, I guess you'd call it, for Hands Off Day, which had been organized by a group called Indivisible with the help of other groups, 50501, the ACLU, I think, was involved. And it turns out, while I had been like sweating this out, thinking like, when's the right time? How am I going to know? These folks were doing the hard work behind the scenes and planned it all for me. And so there was a notice of a march, or not a march, but a protest in D.C. on April 5th. And it's like the cloud lifted and I saw that's where I need to be. I mentioned it to my wife, Belinda, who is normally, she's normally the cautious one in our marriage, and not the impulsive one, which she might think of me as sometimes. And she was on board in a second. And we called two of our three daughters and said, hey, this is what we're doing. You interested? And they were on board in a second. Two of our three, those were the two of our three daughters who were not 8 months pregnant, by the way. And I thought, okay, so a couple of us showing up in D.C., that in itself maybe doesn't make a big difference. But if I can get two or three other people interested in going, and they can get two or three other people interested in going, and those people get a few people interested, it's like, then it means something. It's kind of like the best sense of a pyramid scheme, I thought. Anyway, as you guys all know, it turns out there was events all over the country that day, and a lot of people attended. And quite honestly, if I had known in that initial moment that there was going to be an event up in Erie, we probably would have ended up there. But by the time I understood this, we already had our momentum. We were going to D.C. And I had spoken to my brother who lives in Virginia. He and his wife were going to meet us there, and that's what we did. And it was a great event. But I'm going to talk about one specific thing that I ran across at that event. We're standing in this massive group of people, many, many with signs, a lot of them very creative, some very inspiring, some very funny. But I saw one, a woman holding a sign that said, 3.5% of us topples tyranny. And I was really curious about what that meant. So I took a moment to go up to her and ask her, and she said, it's a thing. She mentioned the name Erica Chenoweth, who is a researcher with the Harvard School of Government. And this woman had, an associate of hers had researched pro-democracy movements over the period from 1900 to 2006. And learned something that seemed very striking, that, and I'm gonna read this so I don't miss it. She came up with the notion that no government can withstand a sustained challenge by at least 3.5% of a population without at least accommodating the movement, or in some cases, disintegrating altogether. Now, in my mind, there's a very important word in that sentence, and that is this, sustained, over a period of time. Our opening song, When the Ship Comes In, that's a song that I've loved and have played at times, probably since my college days. It's a Bob Dylan song, and I didn't realize this until I was doing some preparation for this talk, but apparently Bob Dylan had only played that song maybe three or four times in his entire career, one of which was at the Civil Rights March on Washington in 1963. That seemed rather fitting to me. And was what was neat is I had already decided that we're playing this song, but that was like extra bonus points or something, I don't know. But I will say this about that song, as much as I love it, the scenario it paints is, what, a little bit fanciful, should we say? the seagulls smiling and the fishes laughing and the folks just coming in on the boat, and all of a sudden the opponents say, you know, enough, enough. Well, if you look at it just in that scene, that seems fanciful. But more than likely, that scene is the culmination of months, if not years, of persistent struggle, persistent resistance. One of the things that Erica Chenoweth noted also in her research, and this to me was quite good news, is that a nonviolent movement is twice as likely as a violent movement, or a movement that contains violence, it's twice as likely to be successful. This is one of those happy occasions when doing the morally right thing is also the effective thing. Isn't that great? Why is that the case? Well, as she explained it, and it makes perfect sense, is because a much larger segment of the population is going to see your cause with sympathy and be more inclined to jump on the boat, as it were, if your movement is peaceful. And that was no surprise to me. But I'll say this. For movement to be just peaceful, that's a good start, but maybe it's not quite enough. Some weeks ago, I was at an event up in Erie where there was like a few hundred people stretched out across the Bayfront Highway right during rush hour traffic at the end of the day. It was a brilliant idea, whoever came up with it, because there was this long string of people with signs that stretched out about a half a mile, while hundreds, if not a few thousand cars drove by slow because traffic was slow coming out of town. And it was great. And about, 40 to 50% of all the cars that drove by, they would honk or wave or thumbs up, this or that. And about one out of every 20 cars maybe would flip us off. And I noticed the guy next to me responded in kind. And you know, I didn't say anything at the time, and I sort of wish I had. And I think the next time I would, it's like, you know, I understand the impulse, but us off at the moment could end up being an ally at some point. We're going to need allies at some point. And why alienate them now? Going back to the event in D.C., when I rejoined my group after talking to this woman about her sign, I was telling my brother and his wife, who happens to be Cuban descent, her folks came to the States from Cuba to escape the Castro regime in the early to mid-60s. And I was telling her about the, all it takes is 3.5%. And without missing a beat, she said, yes, that would be 3.5% of people who are willing to take the risk of being arrested or jailed or injured, et cetera. And I thought, of course, that makes sense. And one of the things that I found myself thinking about as the Kilmar Abrego Garcia issue is played out, is it's my sense, it's my belief that the current administration, they have their heels dug in on that issue, not wanting to bring him home, because they want to set a precedent, I think. They want to be able at some point down the road to be able to do that to whoever they want. If they can remove a single person without due process and say, hey, that's a bad dude. And then if it's proven later that there wasn't a bad dude, it's like, oh, well, we can't get him back. I believe that, you know, that's a scary prospect, right? Let's not deny that. I believe that is the whole point of that. But it's not like we're avoiding risks by not taking action. we would just be taking risks of a different sort. Now, let me reference the reading of Martin Niemöller from the earlier in the service, you know, when they came for the communists. You know, I had always thought, I had heard that poem many times over the years, and I always thought it was just an exquisitely crafted piece of rhetoric. It turns out it was a very accurate reflection of this man's choices and this man's experiences. It was the case that initially he was a Nazi sympathizer, and for a long period of time, until the Nazi regime decided that, you know, the church would make an excellent arm of a propaganda machine. And that's when this guy decided, okay, that's where I've got to draw the line. And probably would have become an ally, except he then spent the next 7 years in a concentration camp. Fear can be contagious. But just like fear can be contagious, so can courage. And I think, to a large extent, that's the point. By taking a visible stand, we can encourage others to do the same, and in turn, encourage yet more people to follow suit. And if enough people have a little bit of courage, no one needs to be a hero. If enough people have a little bit of courage, no one needs to be a hero. I'd love to tell you I came up with that those words myself. I did not. It was either Rachel Maddow or a guest on her program that said that, and I thought, I'm going to use that. Oh, I'm going to make another really quick confession. I lied to you about the Smokey the Bear thing. When I saw the Smokey the Bear, I didn't think, like, why is he talking to me? I just thought, when is the next cartoon going to start? But I saw that on a Facebook meme, and I thought that was pretty good. So I thought, I'm going to use that too. So what can you do if you're so inclined? And please understand, I'm not standing up here trying to convince you you should feel the same way as me. What I am trying to do is say, if you do feel the same as me or similar, maybe you want to think about one of two things, either getting on board, and I realize at this point, me even saying that is kind of silly because many of you already are. But for those that are already, let's just recognize that we're probably at the very, very first lap or two of what is probably going to be a long marathon. Anyway, what are some things that you can do? Take a visible stand. Coming up in 2 weeks from yesterday, No King's Day, another day of planned rallies across the country, which happens to coincide with the day that Trump is planning his military parade. And so far it looks like, I don't know if there'll be one in Erie or not, but there is one in Pittsburgh. So you can think about attending that. You can call family and friends, as many as you can think of. You can make phone calls to your representatives. My daughter, Mara, would you mind just raising your hand? My daughter, Mara, and I will say on this point, she puts me to shame. She has been calling state reps, her congressman, senator's office, every day for months. And using what seems to be a very clever app that you can download to your phone to facilitate all of that. Mara will be over in coffee hour. If you have an interest in that app and want to learn a little bit about it, she has graciously said that she'd be happy to talk to anyone who wants to learn more about that. What else can you do? You can get involved in the local organizations that are doing the heavy lifting. The organization that basically opened the door for me and said, here's your opportunity, Len. And that is Indivisible. And sitting back here in this pew are two people I'd like to point out Dan Henninger in the blue sweater and Annette Eccles next to him, they're key players of the local Indivisible chapter. And I believe they too are going to be in coffee hour. And if you want to have a conversation with them about what their organization does, I would highly encourage that. I'm running out of time. I'm going to just take a... What am I going to do? I'm going to take a quick moment. I'm going to say this. You know, in the song, When I'm Gone, Phil Oakes is singing about all the things that he won't be able to do once he passes on, so he's doing them now. I won't be able to do this, I won't be able to do that. If you listen closely, a lot of the references seem to be about participation in a movement, given the time in which he wrote that song. It seems pretty clear to me he's talking about the anti-war movement regarding the Vietnam War. Anyway, in listening to that, I had the thought at one point, it's like, this is funny. He's singing about all the things that he wants to do that he won't be able to do when he dies. And I'm thinking like, I don't know, this feels like stuff I've got to do. Don't get me wrong. Our trip to DC and our involvement in that was a wonderful, wonderful day. It was just fun. It was nice that to have my wife, our kids, some of our kids, other family. It was just a great thing. But there's a difference between going to one event and just being ready to buckle in for what's likely to be many, many, many months of this kind of thing. That doesn't sound like fun to me. But if we do this, I have no doubt things are going to work out well. And I also know that there's some payoffs in the process as well. And that is this, at least for me personally. I find that striving to live my life according to my values, that's an important element that provides meaning in my life. And to stand up for one's values, especially under difficult circumstances, maybe even more so, adds meaning. And having meaning in one's life, at least for me, much more than having fun, although I do love to have fun, and much more than having nice things, and I do like nice things, but more than any of those things, having meaning in my life, that to me, that's an indicator of a life that is well lived. Is it the case that only you can prevent forest fires? Yes, absolutely. Believe it, embrace it, breathe it, and live it. Is it also the case that you're going to need to depend on each other, that we're going to need to depend on each other in these coming months and years? Absolutely. Might seem like a bit of a contradiction. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but life is full of contradictions. And let me just close by saying, in the next few minutes, we'll experience a couple of songs which touch on both sides of those contradictions. And now's a hymn.
Yeah, so as Lenny mentioned, we've been singing this whole time. Now we want